You're listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
Hey, welcome back to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. Hey, Joby.
How you doing, Curtis?
Hey, this is all right. We came in like we're pros. No sound to get us going. Theme song, I should say. Although I could probably sing the last few frames or measures, I guess, but I won't do that.
We could always put it in on the... I already gave it away.
Oops.
On the edit.
Yeah, this is unusual, I think, mostly because, one, we're drinking a pint of water, and we're not live anywhere, and so that's kind of weird, and we know that when I go back home with this audio, that will work the audio magic, the edit room magic, and be able to cut out everything.
Yeah, there is a certain weirdness about not being live.
Yeah, we're not as happy-go-lucky, I think. I don't know, maybe the liveness livens us up, I don't know. But we are here at Wade's Wines, and this is, if I could remember right off the top of my head, we're in Westlake Village off of Anagora Road.
Right,
so you can take a look at, do a Google search, definitely, for Wade's Wines, and you can find their tap room information. We're at the Sundowner tap room, tasting room, I think is the official name for it.
Yeah, and Chris.
Chris, right? Chris Uda, right?
He's the man behind the bar. He's got, I don't know, six or seven delicious looking bottles in front of him.
Right. Some really nice whiskeys were here.
It might be even eight.
Yeah, I think they are doing eight because they'll do four and then take a break and then do another four.
Yeah, they got a paddle of four.
So these people are going to be in fun shape by the time they're all done with their eight tasters. That's for sure. So it'll be fun to sit back here, kind of watch, see how this crowd livens up after a while. We'll see if we can get any good audio from them. But Chris, he's the guy talking, who's going to be giving us all the information. We're just going to kind of sit back, and we don't know what kind of show we're going to do here. We'll just let him kind of talk his way through it, and then when we get a break, we'll interject with whatever we feel is important to us at that time, I guess.
I mean, at the very least, it's going to be a journey in the whiskey education, for sure. Just listening to him talk.
I wonder if we can get Chris. So we were talking just a little bit, and you've got, in your bio, did it say you've got 12 years of spirits?
But being the age I am, like when I started doing tastings, people were always skeptical about whether or not I knew anything about whiskey, so we kind of stretched out my knowledge of spirits. So I do have over 12 years of experience in the spirits industry. Technically, I have quite a bit longer than that, but it was from slinging drinks in my hometown. So it's not like I was studying spirits. I was pretty much serving as many PBRs and vodka tonics as I could in an hour.
Sure. That's definitely experience. No, that is experience.
So you add that in, that way people, when they show up to the tasting, they're a little less... Because I've dealt with older people that have come in, and they can get a little bit aggressive or like trying to challenge the amount that I know about whiskey. And then it turns into this debate, and then someone's got to Google something to find out I'm right, and then it just goes...
See, I told you so.
Yeah.
Come on,
no
you're
one
messing.
Wants to be that guy, so it's just, you put down 12 years, they're kind of like, okay, maybe he's been studying for a while, and they'll leave me alone.
So what's a... Let's start off with maybe the first beer you remember drinking?
That would be a first beer I remember drinking, a Budweiser when I was six.
Nice.
Six, that's pretty good.
Way to go.
Is that part of your 12 years of experience?
No, in the South, they feed you beer and chewing tobacco when you're real young to try to keep you from ever having it again. So,
does it work?
Like, not with the beer, but
chewing tobacco. Sure.
get you sick enough, and then you don't come back to it.
No, but as far as the first beer I remember drinking and enjoying with a buddy of mine, that would have been... We had a Swedish exchange student in my high school, and we managed to score a couple six packs of Carlsberg, and that was
important.
That came in the suitcase with came back home, huh? Is that what?
As far as good beer, I was kind of lucky because when I started, when I first moved to LA in 2007, I worked at a place called Vendome Wine and Spirits in Toluca Lake. Mm-hmm. And they had a great beer selection. A friend of mine from Georgia named Scotland Stevenson was curating this great beer list, and so it was just pearls before swine, all these Cantillons and Russian River beers and all these, like, the hen's teeth of nowadays. I had as much of it as I could possibly drink. And wow. I was like, ah, it tastes like beer. Ah, it tastes like beer.
Nice.
And now I can't get it. Of course, I miss it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's usually how it goes.
But whiskey's where the heart is.
How did you get into whiskeys then? Tell us, you've been schlepping PBRs and gin and tonics, and now all of a sudden you've got all this great beer experience, and now then you just.
Well, what happened was, again, I was living in Georgia, and I was playing in rock and roll bands, and I'd been bartending for a while, and then I was also a plumber, and I could just kind of see the writing on the wall. Like, I love my hometown, but it's never Neverland. You can either go there and live that life for all of your life, and one day you're the older guy that's running around dating college girls and bartending in a bar and, you know, barely making a living.
That happens. No, that's small town.
It doesn't sound that bad, though.
Well,
it doesn't, but at the same time, you can't afford, you can never afford to go have a nice dinner somewhere. You can never afford to go on vacation.
It.
Like,
it sounds good in theory, chasing the college girls.
It's a life choice.
I got you.
So I saw the writing on the wall, you know, and I said, I need to get out of town. So I had two places to go. I had New York or I had Los Angeles. I had friends in both who were going to let me stay at their place. And I came out to L.A. to check it out. And my friend Scotland Stevenson, who was the guy who was doing the beer over at Vendome, he couldn't get off work. So I went into Vendome and started stocking shelves and stuff so I could just hang out with my buddy for the day. And a guy came in to sell him some whiskey. And I asked the guy so many questions about whiskey that by the end of the day, he had offered me a job.
Nice.
And Vendome also offered me a job. So now I had two jobs in one city. So that's what brought me out here. And then I was immediately just pushed into whiskey.
Nice.
But it was before anyone. It was before the big whiskey boom. In 2007, whiskey was starting to become in focus, but it still isn't like the massive madhouse mm-hmm. that it is today.
Right.
And I happen to have an affinity for alcohol, so I just kind of took it and ran.
My kind of guy.
All right, we're going to get along. Yes.
We are going to get along. So do you have a favorite whiskey style? You don't tell me
a
brand.
You can't, you know, choosing a favorite whiskey is like choosing a favorite kid.
Yeah, or favorite style.
Sometimes you just want to kill them all. The favorite style of whiskey? Yes, Scotch whiskey.
Yeah.
Single malt Scotch whiskey is my favorite style of whiskey, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Just because I think it's... Bourbon's great, rye is great, but with Scotch whiskey, you can go from one end of the spectrum of flavor all the way to the other. You can have Scotch whiskeys that taste like mangoes and papayas, and then you can have Scotch whiskeys that smells like 4-day-old dead animal. It's just kind of weird where it can go, so it's always an adventure.
Nice.
And it's always changing, because bourbon's regulated by a lot of rules.
Right.
So bourbon's pretty finite in where it can go. Like they've got that under control. Scotch whiskey, the rules have been changing even as recently as, I mean, in 89, a bunch of rules changed. In the mid-90s, some rules changed. But
And this is regulating Scotland?
This is regulated in Scotland, the Scotch Whiskey Association.
Okay.
Right? So that's kind of my favorite. Because mm-hmm. I'll never be able to fully get my head wrapped around it. Because there's the distillation practices, the way they ran everything is completely different now than what it was then. So it's...
I don't know, innovating, or are they still using 400-year-old?
Well, it's innovation through necessity, so they're more reactive than they are proactive.
Okay.
So to give you an example, they used to use this thing called Paxerat to recondition casks after they had been used. Well, in 1989, they made that illegal to use. So it changed it kind of changed the flavor of Scotch whiskeys when the certain distilleries that were using it stopped using it. It changed the profile of their whiskeys. On top of that, you had the great sherry decline. So it used to be that you would ship your sherry from Spain in a barrel over to the UK, where they would take it out and bottle it, and then you have these empty sherry barrels. Well, the Scottish would use those sherry barrels to put their whiskey in.
Oh.
Well, when was the last time you guys had a glass of sherry?
Yeah.
It's been a while. Yeah. So no one drinks sherry anymore.
Right.
They stopped shipping the sherry in the barrels. They now bottle it. A lot of it's bottled in Spain, or they're shipped in a container in stainless steel. And so those barrels became less and less. Hmm. But bourbon, after 1964, laws were passed that bourbon has to be aged in new oak. And so there's all these bourbon barrels that are readily available for the Scotch whiskey industry to use. So they'll use bourbon now, as opposed to being able to get the sherry cask, so that changed the nature of the whiskey there.
Changing the flavor again, yeah.
Wow.
So tonight...
Tonight we're talking about American whiskeys, though.
American whiskeys,
yeah.
All right.
And tonight's kind of cool, because these guys are going to experience... This is really a we're at the frontier of history being made, because in, you know, 20, 30 years, people are going to look back at the great American whiskey movement, and this is it. So I think it's one, two, three, four different distilleries, different expressions from each, even a little bit of contract bourbon, just to kind of see how the Americans are pushing the envelope as far as what whiskey can be and where it can go and what it can do. The micro distillers are, it's, the best way I can relate it is, I'm the guy in the 1980s trying to sell IPA beer.
Right.
We walked into a place and they said, we got Coors, Bud Light, Miller, Michelob. And now you walk into a place and they're like, well, we're cool. We got Jack, George, you know, Maker's Mark, we're fine.
Right.
But, you know, Glenfiddich, but this is all new expressions.
Awesome.
So that's hopefully cool. Everyone will enjoy it. And if not, cool. You know, they can throw their food at me.
I don't think anybody would be throwing their food at you.
Yeah, I doubt that.
No, but that's awesome. Well, we're looking forward. It looks like you got a full house. So
it is. I'm going to get back to him.
Yeah. You go ahead. So go ahead.
We'll talk to you at the break, right, Chris. Thank you.
All right. So that's, I had no idea that, that there was, so many, that Scotch was, had changed so much. I figured that was, an industry that was built on tradition and that they weren't going to step away from that.
No, and they almost change conveniently.
Oh.
You know, or, hey, we need to change something. You know? And it's one of those adapting things. Like you were saying, you don't see that with, like, American whiskeys or bourbon, or you don't see tequila changing its rules, you know. And the,
well, I, you know, one of the things, like, with whiskey that I've noticed is that they'll change their... like Colorado whiskey, and so they'll make a brand new.
They'll make an appellation.
Appellation for it.
I'm pretty sure Chris is going to talk about that. And actually, I forgot to ask him, but I'll remember to ask him later. But bourbon used to be exclusive to Kentucky, and now you can have California bourbon, Colorado bourbon, New York bourbon. Mm-hmm. There's a Hudson New York bourbon. So the rules are still the same, where at least 50% corn or maize base. Mm-hmm. But it can be made other places, which is really cool.
Yeah.
We'll take a little...
Let's do it. And right. When we come back, we'll have Chris talking.
Chris talking
for sure.
On the mic.
So while you're...
does he have a website we can...
He does, and it's jvsimports.com. That's who
I
he works.
I should mention, that's the... Yeah, that would be the supplier, the importer. So,
he's,
you can't order from them.
No, he's...
But hit up your local place, for sure.
He's the Southern Division Manager, and you can catch him at... Twitter at Whiskey Redhead, which is fitting.
Says what it does.
Yeah. So if you want to follow Chris and his whiskey, and
I think
tweets,
I'm going to. I mean,
tweets him
just,
the Whiskey
just
Redhead.
Just for that 5 minutes. I mean,
right. I know, and he's a fairly young guy, and,
yeah.
And he's got a lot of years of whiskey tasting ahead of him. All right. So so Wade's going to talk here, and we'll get going here.
Go to break. Happy hour with Joby and Curtis.
I'll catch you back.
And now back to the show.
All right, so I guess we're being broadcast tonight, guys. I'm not on, so just keep talking. And hey, ba-dum-bunts. We got a comedian. So we're being broadcast tonight at Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis, and they're over there. Go harass those guys. So none of you guys have been to one of my whiskey tastings before. This is no repeat offenders. This is kind of nice. Oh, a couple of you. Well, I don't really know nothing about whiskey, so I suppose that makes sense. Welcome to an American whiskey tasting. Have you ever been to an American whiskey tasting before? Mostly bourbon. Have you been to whiskey tastings before? All right, you guys, was Scotch whiskey? I like Scotch whiskey. That's cool. Tonight, tonight you're on the, this is weird. Normally I just scream instead of using a mic. Excuse it. This is actually the cusp of history being made. Like, people will look back on this in 30 years, and they'll talk about the Great American Whiskey Movement. And your kids or grandkids will say, golly, you tried those whiskeys? And you'll be like, yes, I did. And by the way, I cuss. So yes, I did, you little shit, and I'll go cut the grass because I'm going back to watching TV. And that's kind of what it is. For years and years, you've always had Scotch whiskey. You've always had bourbon. You've always had rye. You've had your Canadian whiskeys. You've had your Irish whiskey. They're all fine and good. They're brilliant whiskeys. But recently, we've seen a spark in the American micro distillery movement. And that's what we're going to try some of tonight. And the first whiskey you have, because I realize everyone likes to drink more than they like to listen to a presenter, so just go ahead and start drinking. You're going to start with the long end of the handle. So you work from the handle in, or handle out, however it works. But this is a whiskey that's made from quinoa. This is from the Corsair Distillery. This distillery is located in Bowling Green, Kentucky. They have a separate facility in Nashville, Tennessee. They were the first distillery to go into Nashville in well over 100 years. And this whiskey is straight up made from quinoa. It is a superfood whiskey. If you're on a diet, it's cool, man. You got it, right? I know I'm on a diet. I get married in a couple weeks, and I need to lose the LBs pretty bad. I'd spent a couple weeks, you know, completely trashed in Scotland, and it didn't help things. But you can smell it, and you can nose it, and you taste it however you want. Those of you who have never been to a whiskey tasting before, it's easy. That's my excuse to have a little. Basically, you just swirl it in your glass. Look at the legs if you want. The way that they teach you to nose and taste whiskey is to open your mouth, put the tip of your tongue at the roof of your mouth where your teeth meet the roof of your mouth, and breathe in both through your nose and through your mouth all at once. It'll help dissipate the alcohol, and you'll get to the actual flavor of the whiskey. Now, that having been said, nose it from the top. Ladies, you tend to have a 40% better sense of smell than guys, so don't stick your nose in the glass like a wine. Just let the aroma come to you. Now, I've had my nose broken a few times, so if you're in the same boat I am, just go ahead, stick your nose in there and wiggle it around and smell and do whatever you want. But that's how they teach you to taste and smell whiskey. But if you've been doing it for X amount of years a certain way, that's fine. I don't want you to change what you've come to know, because really, whiskey is about having fun and just about building your own personal foundation. It is a very personal thing to drink whiskey, and I don't think that you can drink it in the wrong way. So if you want to have whiskey on top of Frankenberries for breakfast, that's cool with me. Like, drink it however you want. If someone's telling you you're drinking your whiskey wrong, you kick them in the nuts, you take the bottle, and you run down the street and drink with some people who are going just there to have some fun. But, you know, it's meant to be enjoyed. It's meant to be enjoyed and shared. It's just like any beverage. And that's how it should be. And anyone that thinks I'm wrong can stand up and challenge me, because I promise you, unless their name's Marty Carey, I've drank more whiskey than you have. Marty's drank more whiskey than I ever will. But the first one's made from quinoa. And it's actually, if those of you that know about different types of grain, quinoa does not have very much sugar to it. So it's not really a fermentable grain. I mean, you can get some fermentation process from it, but not much. It's really used as a flavoring agent. So this is 80% barley, 20% quinoa. And it's done in a hybrid pot column still. So it's a column still that looks like a little Buddha belly. And then at the top, it's going to have a line arm with different, the best way I can describe it is, you know, the goggles from the Minions from Despicable Me, the guy with the one eye. It looks like that, going one stacked on top of the other. And those eyes, the Minions' eyes, are actually refractor plates that help you separate the ethanol from the other compounds within the mixture that you're distilling. And you can adjust that to how you want, to where you can run it like a pot still or you can run it like a column still. And for this, they run it like a pot still, and it runs in batches. This is batch number 10. The bottle that we're having right here is bottle 170 of only 175 that were made. That's why this is kind of like the verge of history being made. Like, you know, in 30 years, Corsair's doing really well. Their triple smoke, which we'll have later on tonight, was just given Artisan Whiskey of the Year. They're going to stay in business unless they decide to close down or they sell it off because somebody wants to close them down, but they're pretty healthy financially speaking. So in 30 years, it will be on batch like 250 or something crazy, or maybe batch 2000, and you'll get to say to your grandkids, yeah, I had batch 10, you little sucker. So enjoy it for what it is. It's just an alternative. You know, bourbon and rye has always been good, but we're just at the verge of being able to have alternatives. It's you just pushing the envelope of what's been available. So I'm the guy in the 1980s selling the IPAs is basically what it is. But have we all had the first whiskey? Ready for the second one? All right, the second one is a trick. This is Fog's Inn Monterey Rye. It's made up in Gonzales, California. This is actually pot distilled, but we notice it just says Monterey Rye. It doesn't say the word whiskey on the bottle. And the reason for that is technically it's not a whiskey. It'll have a bit of a whiskey flavor to it, but it's actually not classified as a whiskey. It's just classified as a spirit. And the reason for that is you've got to understand what whiskey is. So if you were to define whiskey, think about whiskey like this. If you're anywhere in the world except for the United States and you say the word whiskey, you're referring to scotch. If you're in the United States and you say the word whiskey, you're referring to Tennessee whiskey or you're referring to bourbon, typically. That's how we're raised. Whiskey is just a distilled spirit made from grain. And that's all it is. Just like wine is a fermented beverage made from grapes. So whiskey has its different children. It has its bourbon. It has its rye. It has its Canadian. It has its scotch. And what separates them from each other are, A, where they're made, and B, the base grain that is used. So scotch whiskey, single malt scotch whiskey, is made with only three ingredients: malted barley, yeast, and water. Bourbon is made with predominantly corn. At least 51% corn, by law, is the base grain for bourbon. Then you might have bourbon, you might have corn, rye, and barley, malted barley, or you might have corn, wheat, and barley. Or you can have corn, rye, wheat, and barley. You can do different mix of grains. But that's kind of what defines the spirit. The quinoa whiskey was 80% malted barley, 20% quinoa. This is rye, but this is run by a retired sheriff named Craig Packish. And Craig just kind of used his part of his pension to get a warehouse and buy a still and get some licenses. And then he just started distilling. He just went for it. And he couldn't afford to get a mash tun. So he didn't have a way to pull the sugar. He didn't have a grist either, a mill either to grind his grain into a grist. So he didn't have a way to harvest the sugar from the grain. So what does he do? He takes sugar, just straight up sugar, mixes it in with water, throws in the yeast. The yeast starts to feed off the sugar as if you were making a rum. But then he goes a step further to throw the rye grain in there so it picks up some of the rye qualities. And that's how he does his fermentation. So that's why those of you who might know a lot about whiskey, you notice a little bit of a rummy characteristic. That's why. But you also notice the rye is also prevalent. And then this guy, and this is what's really cool, is that he takes it even a step further. He'll do his pot distillation. His pot still holds 60 gallons, so he harvests right about 8 gallons per distillation run. That's it. And he'll take that, and then he puts in these flex tanks, which breathe just like barrels, and uses Hungarian oak. So whereas bourbon and rye would be used aged in American oak, even a lot of Scotch whiskeys are made aged in American oak or French oak, he's using Hungarian oak. So he's just taking all the rules, throwing them out the window, and producing something that's completely unique. Now, some people will love it. Some people won't love it. It's neither here nor there because it's meant to be enjoyed. You know, it's a personal thing. But it's simply an alternative. So your entire life you're raised on Jack. Jack is cool. I cut my teeth on it. That's fine. But now you've got an alternative that you can have besides that. Same thing with Budweiser. I drank Budweiser for forever, and I like having an IPA now and again. So that's the second one that you have in front of you. Craig still operates out of this warehouse. He calls me up every now and again and says, "How's my whiskey doing?" I'm like, "Your whiskey's doing fine, man, but it's not really a whiskey." And he laughs. He goes, "Yeah, I know." He's working on getting a mash tun. He's hoping to get one within the next year so he can actually go back. But I hope he doesn't stop making this because I really like the spirit. And you can see how strikingly different they are. The second you switch grains, the distillation, and oak's always going to change things, but when you switch grains, it's a completely different animal, just like with beer. So when you make a whiskey, basically you just take your grain, you add a hot water to it just to harvest the sugar, the starch from the grain, and add your yeast, it ferments it into the yeast. Feeds off the sugar water. The byproduct is carbon dioxide and alcohol. You're basically making a beer, but you're missing one ingredient. What's the ingredient? Hops. So you're making a beer without hops, which is delicious and you can drink, but then you got to take it, boil it, and you siphon off different compounds. Your first compound that you'll get is the methanol. If any of you decide, I do not recommend this, but should you moonshine at home, let me just give you a little bit of warning. Not that I would know anything about moonshining at home. I'm from Georgia, by the way, but my accent's muddled. The first compound you're going to get, the second you're what's called a wash, the second it starts to boil, the first compound you're going to get off your still is the methanol. Don't drink that. That'll make you go blind. It's not good. It's really about your first 5%. So it's at 140... And in case you do this, 147 degrees Fahrenheit, like your still's hovering around there and you're getting liquid coming off, that's your methanol. Wait. It'll kick up to about 170, 172. Then you're past the methanol. You're starting to harvest the ethyl acetate and the ethanol. and that is fine to drink and keep. Ethyl acetate will give you some fruity flavors. Ethanol is the actual part that you want to drink, and then beyond that, you get the propanol 1 and propanol 2, which is like your rubbing alcohol, and then it just starts to get nastier from there. So you don't want to keep all of that. Yeah, note to self, not that you should ever do it, but should you find yourself in a situation where someone has you at gunpoint and you are distilling, don't drink the methanol. So we've had the first two whiskeys. Are we ready for the third whiskey? I'm moving it through kind of fast, but, you know, it was hot today. You guys are thirsty. I can see it. And I don't have that many jokes. So, Pritchard's Distillery. Let me tell you about Pritchard's Distillery for a bit. This is a Tennessee whiskey, but this is a Tennessee whiskey from a man, from a 70-year-old man. I don't know how old Mr. Pritchard is now, but he's old enough to tell me what to do for sure. And he's a bit hard-headed, in a good way. So most of you identify Tennessee whiskey with George Dickel or Jack Daniels. And you'll hear them talk about the Lincoln County process where they do a charcoal filtration. Mr. Pritchard decided he didn't want to do that, so he didn't do it. And Marty, will you do me a favor and grab a bottle of Tennessee off the shelf in there, but be careful carrying it. Don't shake it. And he didn't want to do that, so he doesn't do it. He goes, screw it, I don't have to do it, I'm not gonna do it. And so the only difference between Tennessee whiskey and bourbon, by the way, guys, is that when they were making the laws for bourbon in 1964, they invited Tennessee whiskey to be included as being acknowledged as being a bourbon. And the Tennessee whiskey guys are like, screw you, our whiskey's better than yours. We don't want a whiskey named after your county. Like, absolutely not. If you get a bottle of this, it's gonna be difficult to do because there's so many people in here, but if you take it and you flip it like that real quick, you'll see these have been shaken up. You'll see a little bit of smoke come off the bottom. He doesn't filter, so there's actually leftover char of the wood and a little bit of the oil from the grain. But if you guys get a bottle, don't hurry up and drink it. Let it sit for a week and then do that, and you'll see what I'm talking about. So they said, no, we're Tennessee whiskey. We're better than bourbon. We don't want to be affiliated with bourbon. We're good. You do what you're going to do. We're going to do what we're going to do. And life went on. And then comes along this gentleman by the name of Phil Pritchard. Now, it's called Benjamin Pritchard's, like, double barrel bourbon and Benjamin Pritchard's Tennessee whiskey because Benjamin was Phil's granddad. And Benjamin had stills that nobody knew about until Benjamin died. And in his will, he left a map to where the stills were. And so he felt it was, you know, to honor his grandfather, he was going to put in Benjamin Pritchard's whiskey. But Phil opened up, I think he pulled his license in 1994. And when he did, he was the first... He was like the number four micro distillery license in the country, and he was the first, I think, license in Tennessee in, I want to say it was like 125 or 150 years. And it gets better because when he went to pull his license and he went to the bank to get a loan, he's like, I'm going to open a distillery. And they're like, we haven't had a distillery open here in over 100 years. He goes, yeah, that's cool. But I'm going to open a distillery. They're like, okay, well, what are you going to make? He's like, I'm going to make rum. And they're like, Jesus, get out. And the bank wouldn't give him any money. What he was how he came about to make rum is he was, at one point in time, he was a long distance landline salesman. So he was selling long distance plans for landlines, and you can see that career's finite now. I mean, we all have cell phones, right? But he was also a dental technician, and he got tired of his job, so he said, you know what, I'm done doing this. I don't like it. So he quit, and he goes home, and he's unemployed, and he's sitting around. He's got nothing to do. So he's like, well, I got nothing to do. I'll take a canning pot, one of those blue ones with the white freckles on it. I'll clamp the lid to it with some clamps, and I'll drill a hole in the top and fit a quarter inch copper tube to that. And then I'll just start moonshining on my stove. It'll be great. And in his words, he would put the pot, his little canning pot, on the stove. And the copper tube would run off into a bucket of cold water that he would have, his words, ladies, on his wife's ironing board. That's always a classic for him. And he would just start making rum. And his buddies would come by and they would drink rum. And by the way, you guys can taste this whiskey as I'm telling you this long-winded story. It's cool. I'll tell you about the whiskey in a second. And he would make this rum and his friends were like, Phil, you make the best rum ever. You gotta make this for real. And he's like, well, that means I got to pull licenses. So... That's when he went to the bank. The bank threw him out. He bought some stills. He got a couple investors. And he pulled a license. He pulled a federal license, and all was good. What he didn't do was he neglected to pull local licenses for the county and for the state. So he was, federally speaking, he was not moonshining, but on a state and local level, he was moonshining. And word got out to the sheriff that he was moonshining, and word also got out to Phil that he was moonshining, and word got out to Phil that the sheriff was coming to take him to jail. So the day before the sheriff showed up to take him to jail, Phil had the stills dismantled and moved to where? An elementary school. This, it gets even better. A former elementary school over in Lincoln County. So the sheriff shows up and he's like, "Hey, Phil, I heard you were distilling." And Phil's like, "Yeah, I was." And he's like, "All right, you can still see the prints on the in the garage from where the stills were." And the sheriff's like, "All right, you're out of my town, not my problem. Go about your business." And he goes over to this old elementary school, which has been converted to community center. And he sets up his stills there, and he starts distilling there. And that's, you know, he's still making his rum, and he starts making whiskey as well. Now, I don't know what you guys know about construction, but if you or about the South, but old buildings in the South, we made them out of heart pine and yellow pine. So basically what people pay a lot of money for their flooring now, that's what we use for our bead boards for the walls and the ceiling. And the floors were all made out of heart pine, which is 100-year-old pine trees, like basically kinder. It was just matchsticks waiting to go up. And you walk in the Pritchard's Distillery, and there are these stills, and you open a door, and there's no floor in the room where you open the door at, and you're walking through, and you're looking around, and you're like, "Oh, boy, no sprinkler system. Everything's heart pine." And you're like, "Hey, Phil, aren't you worried?" He goes, "Nah, man, it's cool." You know, someone's lighting a cigarette off to their side, and you're just like, "Oh, Jesus, here we go, here we go." But it hasn't burned down yet, and they're building a new facility now in Nashville as well, and they're still going to run the old distillery. I'm just waiting. One day we're going to read about this place going up. And you guys can all say he told us so. But it's a beautiful distillery run by this, you know, by this grumpy old man who's got a great personality, and he does things his own way. And the Tennessee whiskey is not charcoal filtered. It doesn't go through the Lincoln County process. And what separates this from the other Tennessee whiskeys is that this is actually made from white corn. One thing you need to understand about the American microdistillers is because of economies of scale, they cannot buy grain from brokers at the same price that everybody else can. If you think about yellow corn, think about what it is used for. Ethanol, animal feed, human feed, making bourbon for very big distilleries. So yellow corn is like going through the roof as far as the price of it goes. So these American micro distillers can't buy in the bulk sizes that they need to be able to get prices to compete, so they have to find alternative methods. So Mr. Pritchard's a pretty resourceful guy. He calls up his local grit factory and says, "You know, you guys make grits. You have leftovers. What are you doing with the leftovers?" They're like, "Nothing." So he buys that. And it's just white corn. And white corn has a higher sugar content per pound than yellow corn. So you can make the same amount of wash with a less amount of the white corn. And so that's what he's using for the Tennessee whiskey. So it's white corn, rye, and barley, and then aged in oak barrels. And it's pot distilled. He's got old school pot stills. It looks like a Scotch whiskey distillery, actually. And it's very nice and light. And now's my excuse to have some more, right? All right, when you taste this whiskey, think about the other two that you've just had. You've had one from quinoa that noses like quinoa and has a little bit of a sweet quality from the barley and then a little bit of a citrus quality from the quinoa. The Monterey Rye has got that little bit of the cane agricole flavor with the rye, with the spicy rye behind it. And here you get that white corn. You can taste the toast of the oak, and you get the sweetness of the white corn as well. Again, just different base grain will produce a different spirit, just like with a boutique beer. It's all just options. That's all it's ever going to be is options. Because, and it does taste kind of like a bourbon, for those of you who drink bourbon. Are you ready for your fourth whiskey? All right, so the fourth whiskey is also from Pritchard's Distillery. This is his rye. It's Tennessee rye whiskey. Now, my understanding of this is that this is partially contract rye and pot distilled rye that's from the distillery. If you see the distillery and you look at the amount of distribution he has, you'll notice that you'll start putting two and two together and you're like, there's no way that he can make everything that he sells. And he doesn't. It's kind of, a lot of micro distilleries will tell you that they're making everything that they sell. Well, they won't tell you. They'll just kind of skirt around the question, but they'll pretend like they're making everything that they sell, but they actually don't. A lot of whiskey that you drink from micro distilleries comes from larger distilleries that sold to them in bulk, and then they manipulate it how they want. This is one of those. They take a combination of the rye is a combination of bulk distilled rye and pot distilled rye from Pritchard's Distillery. And one of the things that you can do to identify rye whiskeys from other whiskeys, and some of you are going to understand what I'm talking about and some of you are not, and that's cool because remember it's all personal preference. But when you have a really strong rye whiskey, if you think of dill or pickles, you'll get a little hint of dill or pickles on the nose and even on the palate. That's a way to tell that there's rye grain in whiskey. Just a little cheat note. With corn, you usually get, you know, corn obviously, but then you might get some cherry notes. Especially with some overproof bourbon, you might get like some cherry notes or some mint. But with rye, you'll get a little bit of dill. And again, it's just a very nice, light rye whiskey from Pritchard's. And our first four whiskeys were four different types of grain. Well, I guess we had two ryes in there technically. But four different types of grain, four different distillation methods. And you can see it's just four different alternatives that you had that you didn't have before. Do we like what we've had so far? You guys are all quiet. I can't ever tell. Like, my class, I did a class up in Santa Rosa a few nights ago, and everybody was quiet there, too, and I couldn't tell if they were enjoying themselves or they were ready to lynch me. It was kind of the way it went. All the Northern California jokes weren't helping my cause. All right. So, you see, I mean, I'm secretly just jealous because it's so hot here right now. Jesus. So those are the first four whiskeys. What I'm going to get you to do is empty them out into your bellies or empty them out into your neighbor's glass so he can empty them into his belly. And then I'll give you a few minutes and then we'll come around and pour the next four. Sound good? All right.
And now back to the show.
I absorbed a lot of information there.
Yeah, I...
Well, I mean, some great stories about the actual distilleries.
Yeah,
behind the scenes information that you just don't get.
Right. The rye story about the guy who's basically fermenting sugar water and then throwing the rye in. That's
just to give it that grain flavor.
That's an interesting aspect. I mean,
it just shows you can make something even if you don't have a mash tun.
Well, yeah, and then what we were talking about just a little bit before he started in talking, too, so one of the things that we hit was just the different ways of making whiskey, and here's, I guess he's technically calling it...
Well, he's not a whiskey, right?
Is he calling it a whiskey?
He can't.
And
because there is no fermented grain.
Because there's no mash in it.
Yeah, there's no fermented grain.
Yeah, so, but...
But it has big, I think... Big letters that say rye, so that, you know, when you look at that,
sure,
you're going to equate that with the whiskey.
Yeah, and then...
Which is smart.
Well, and then I think that's a good... I'd be interested to taste that to see if it's a good stepping stone between a regular whiskey and a rye. Because when I first started drinking rye whiskeys, I didn't appreciate them. They were a little harsh, they bit back a little bit, and so... Having something that's a little sweeter come through on that would be, I think, would be an interesting kind of way to cut your teeth on whiskey, so to speak.
And I like that one, the Pritchard's, is it's not filtered. So he actually said that if you let your bottle sit, you'll actually get some charcoal remnants sitting at the bottom. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd be able to, if I bought that, if I'd be able to...
wait a week?
Yeah, let that sit.
He did say that. He said, go ahead and wait a week until you open it.
You know, if you were to maybe crash cool it, put it in the freezer and let it for a few hours, you might be able to speed that
up. Or how about open it, pour a glass, and then let it sit?
You know what?
Does that still work?
Just to wet your whistle as you're waiting, I suppose.
Yeah. So, I think Pritchard's and I can't remember the... blanking on the other name.
Have you had any of these before?
I have never had any of these. I've had Pritchard's, we were talking about earlier, Georgia Peach Mango Rum, and a peach whiskey liqueur. So technically not a whiskey anymore, but a whiskey-based liqueur from Pritchard's. But no, I've never had a straight whiskey, so exciting.
So how is it considered a whiskey liqueur?
Well, I guess it's just considered a liqueur made... So, sugar is added, alcohol level is taken down.
Sweetness. I see. So yeah,
so it's somewhere around 25% alcohol.
And a scotch is, we're looking at probably 45.
40 minimum. Okay. 45. Cask strength stuff is, meaning not diluted by water, so mm-hmm. right out of the barrels, 58%. I've seen some 59.
I've had a cask one before, and boy, that one, you needed to cut it. You couldn't do, you know, just a little bit of water and ice cube. Cause
actually, even just a couple of dry, I had someone kind of like Chris, who was really into scotch, and we were talking about, we were doing tasting, and we got to the cask strength, and he said, try it. And then, of course, you got, you know, really big alcohol fumes. Then he said, take a couple of drops of water and just mm-hmm. put it in, and the bouquet just opened up. It was amazing. It's just that reintroducing that water into it, but just a few drops.
Right. I kind of went, I don't know, real strict on my whiskey drinking where, you know.
Meaning you didn't drink it? Or
No. Where I didn't want to put anything in it.
Oh, right.
And so.
Very pure.
Trying to be.
Right.
Thinking that I could, you know, I wanted to find. I wanted to know what it was supposed to taste like, not what I could mix it with. You know, I mean, for me at that point, it was I equated to a slippery slope of before too long, I'm going to be putting a splash of Diet Coke in it or something. and nobody wants that. But
no.
But I you know, I've got a couple whiskeys at home, and I had one the other night, and you know, I put an ice cube in it, and by the time I got to the end of that, it was. Really a great drink, you know. It was just a little bit of water in there, and of course I was watching House of Cards, you know, so they're drinking scotch or whiskey the whole time, whatever it is, you know.
Encouraged
you right so I was sitting there, oh, you know what, I'm watching these guys pretend to be politicians, I'm gonna sit on my couch and pretend to be a whiskey drinker. So
well, I think Chris he nailed it when he said, you know, don't worry about what somebody says, how you're drinking your whiskey. But I think we do get into that mode and we say, what? You want 4 ice cubes in your whiskey? That is blasphemy. You can only have 2 ice cubes in your, you know. And being on the other side of the bar where customers, you know, tickets are coming through with these funny things like, you know, Jameson 18, 3 ice cubes, you know. And it's just like, and that's what it's all about, though. If that's how you like it, if you like it with 3 ice cubes, if you like it with 4, if you like it with a splash of soda.
Yeah.
But definitely try it without any type of mixer so you can really experience it. Right. And then go for it. Do it Manhattan or Old Fashioned. I love those.
Mm-hmm.
So why not?
Right. And I've really learned the pleasure of whiskey in a mixed drink as well, in a cocktail. So I've certainly broadened or loosened up on my...
On the strictness.
Right.
And there's certain ones that... You probably wouldn't dare mix. But right. I mentioned Jameson 18. You're not going to, I mean, I hope not.
Well,
I hope you're not doing picklebacks with that.
I don't even know what that is, but it doesn't sound good at all.
It's actually really good. Apparently, San Francisco is obviously years ahead of us on this, but I just heard about it in Ventura, and I'm hooked. You get the best pickle juice that you can get. I mean, I'm talking high-quality pickle juice here.
So are you making your own, or are you just like a Vlasic?
If you can make your own, even better.
Okay.
If not, Vlasic will have to do in a pinch,
in a
right?
Pinch. All
right. But definitely the homemade or farmer's market type of one. You get a shot of Jameson, and then you take and pickle back. So you have your pickle juice back, and the refreshment of the pickle juice, it's the vinegar. It sounds totally weird and odd, but it's actually really good. Mm-hmm. And being a fan of pickles and pickle juice, I was sold.
Very good.
But that, you know.
That sounds. I don't really like pickles by themselves, but like a pickle on a hamburger, yeah, I'm all about that. Or on a sandwich, I can do that. But pickles by themselves, and I just mixing it. That
pickle juice though.
I know.
You don't want to put pickle parts.
But it's you know, that's the flavor that.
And
you
it's
can.
Actually really good for you, is what they say.
Oh,
pickle juice,
good.
Yeah, hydrates you. Yeah,
a schweizel. Well, the you know, I can remember I had my dad came to visit, and I didn't. His generally it's like, what is it? Black Windsor, and what's there's a black.
Is that Canadian whiskey?
Canadian, yeah. Canadian Windsor, and
is that like even cheaper than Black Velvet?
Black Velvet, yeah.
It's cheaper than Black Velvet.
I think it is. Yeah.
Wow.
But I didn't have any, and that's my dad's drink. Well, I mean, you know, this is like kind of what Chris was talking about, the hometown kind of thing. You know? Right. There's nothing.
Now, does he do that with Seven, or is that straight up
Coke? Yeah. Nice. So that'd be like a, but it'd be a caffeine free diet Coke. Oh yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
We'll give it a shot.
I think we just got offered some whiskey.
Sweet. That'd be great. So we so that was like his would be you know, he's the Keystone Light drinker, and so this is there.
Does he buy those in the handles?
AKA
the half gallon.
It would be a half gallon, but yeah, I don't think Windsor comes in a half gallon though. I mean, in a handle, maybe. But so anyway, so I think I had a 15, like a Glenfiddich, and that was the only whiskey I had. And then he poured in a caffeine-free Diet Coke on top of it, and
well,
I went.
I mean, God bless it for putting caffeine-free at least. Why does he want to get amped up?
Right, you don't want to be drunk and.
I think that's where I would draw the line, though. I mean, I know it's your dad.
I know. Well, he said, I'm so sorry, I got to do this, because he tried. What?
At least he apologized.
Well, he tried it too. I mean, he tried to enjoy it, and then he just couldn't do it, and so he's like, this is just too strong.
He's just not a straight whiskey kind of guy. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I. You know, I think I've said it before, but I grew up with, you know, my uncle's, you know, 7 and 7. That mm-hmm. was, you know, that's the extent of the whiskey.
Right.
What I didn't realize is I looked on the back of the bottle, because we had a discussion of what's the difference between Seagram's 7 and Seagram's VO.
Oh, yeah. Well, I haven't.
Apparently, I don't know. I think Jason is being our ambassador of whiskey right now.
Oh,
anything
nice
we can get, Jason.
Whatever it is.
We're not picky. So, on the back of the Seagram 7, it is made up of neutral grain spirit, aka
Everclear
vodka. Yes, Everclear. So it's not even 100% whiskey. And I was like, oh man.
Okay, so let me catch up again, because I got distracted there for a second. The VO is
The VO is straight up whiskey.
Oh, straight up. Okay,
and the 7 is the cut whiskey. And I never knew that. And I felt like I've handled thousands of bottles of Seagram 7
right
growing up in a liquor store, finally turning around, I was like, 70% neutral grain spirit, very nice.
Wow.
So free hangover
with
that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, how that's still called a whiskey, I'm not sure.
I don't know.
I'll have to ask Chris that.
So Seagram's, the 7 and 7 is 7 Up.
7 and, Up and Seagram 7, okay. Yeah, classic drink.
Okay.
But, I got a little off topic there. Sorry.
But, no. Oh, well.
But, you know, see, just those classic drinks then. Thank you very much. Oh, yeah, the very first one. Thank you. So this is the quinoa. As Chris was mentioning, quinoa does not ferment very well. It's not very much sugar, so the flavor is going to be in there still.
Right.
And healthy for you.
Well, and, yeah, that's the other.
Thank you.
The whole thing, you know, how healthy quinoa is, I guess.
Panel's number one.
Thank you.
Thank you. So we've got our flight here.
We've handed a platter of whiskey.
This is all right.
Yeah.
So the
this is the new flight? All right. Thank you.
Yeah. So on the nose, it's definitely it's a different.
Definitely whiskey.
Yeah. But a different I don't know base layer underneath there too.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Thank you. Let's say thanks to Wade for setting us up with a flight here.
That is some nice stuff there too.
So you do get there is another flavor there that's not going to be in my regular whiskey because of the quinoa.
Right. Yeah, and I can. Is quinoa on the menu at home for you?
No.
Very often.
Is it on yours?
Yeah. You know.
So you got that flavor right away.
Right. It's a high protein substitute too. So, you know, I know plenty of people who had cut red meat out and then were just doing poultry and have actually cut their poultry out and gone with quinoa. So, and having a wife who's a vegetarian, there's plenty of reasons for us to have a protein substitute.
That's not bad at all, though. And the color was, I mean, for the viewers at home, very light.
I'm doing the breathe in. and technique, and it's I breathed it in a little too hard, and I almost did a newbie cough right into the microphone as it came back.
But that's a great. I mean, we've talked about that now with vodka, with tequila, with Alex on the show, with limoncello. That breathe, that get that alcohol right out of your system. You know, that the alcohol nose, get it right out, so you can taste the rest of the distillate. Because otherwise, you're not. Especially with, we're talking 40%, 50% alcohol. That sip, 50% of that is alcohol.
Right.
And now, back to the show.
All right, so I think we're ready. We're going to get the... All right, cool. You guys can all hear me?
Hello.
Can everyone hear me okay? All right. So, now, you've got four more whiskeys in front of you. Before you have anything, just take a second and nose each one of them. I've got a reason for this. So, the first one, the one closest to the handle, is the double chocolate bourbon from Pritchard's Distillery. The next one should be the Homestead Bourbon at 113 proof. The third one is an American single malt whiskey that has been smoked. We'll talk about it in a minute. And the fourth one is the Colorado Gold Bourbon. Now, you've nosed them. We'll nose them again in a second. But I'll give you a quick blurb about each one. And then nose it and think about it as I'm talking about it. So the Pritchard's Double Chocolate Bourbon. Basically, it's made in Kentucky. I told you the distillery's in Tennessee. He doesn't make the bourbon. That's common, guys. A lot, like I said, a lot of the distilleries, you know, if you see a bourbon from a distillery that's only been open for 6 months, they probably didn't make the bourbon, if you think about it. If you see a bourbon from a distillery, like if someone has a 21-year-old rye and the distillery was only opened in the early 2000s, you know, you put two and two together. What it boils down to is, it boils down to cash flow. Like these guys, a lot of these mom and pop distilleries, they put their life savings into getting these stills, and they'll put their life savings into getting the stills, and they'll put their life savings into getting a building to do the stills, and the government will come in and say, you got to have your sprinklers, you got to do this, you got to do that, and they'll spend all their money on that, and then it comes time to make whiskey, and they have a little bit of money to make some whiskey, but then they've got to make more whiskey, and then they've got to buy more materials, and then like, oh man, I'm out of money. And, by the way, you can't sell that whiskey right now. You got to wait a little while and let it mature. And they're like, oh, nuts. Well, we're out of money. Now what do we do? We'll sell a white dog. So they start to sell white dogs, and they make some pretty good white dogs. It's like some unaged whiskeys. So then what do the big guys do? They're like, oh, you little pissants are selling white dogs? We got that. And we have marketing budgets. So we're going to take our white dog, and we're going to flood the market with it, and we're going to use our marketing budget to pretty much crush you out of it. And then the white dog market just disappears because it was whiskey that was released that was made originally intended to be aged. So it didn't show as well as the unaged whiskeys that were made distilled to be drank right then. It's a different process, believe it or not. A different style to your distillation. So that killed that market. So now these craft distillers are like, well, we got to get cash in somehow. But all along, they've been brokering and buying whiskey. So they're like, we'll just broker and buy some more whiskey. So they'll source some whiskey from a bigger guy, you know, from an industrial producer, slap their label on it, and they'll sell it. And you figure the public would cry foul, right? Well, not necessarily, because A, a lot of the public doesn't know that happens. And B, these craft distillers, they are putting their name on it. And this is, you know, this is their life savings. This is their brand. Their legacy, so they're not going to release anything bad. They're going to choose really good barrels and release that from the bigger producers. So instead of just taking whatever they can, bottling up and sending it out, no, absolutely not. They're going to taste through it. They're going to blend it. They're going to blend different barrels in a way to where they show really well together, and that's what they're going to release. I don't want you to think that they're just trying to pull the smoke over your eyes. They're not. They're just trying to fund their production and their aging of whiskey by releasing whiskey that they've taken and kind of accelerated to the next level. Some guys will do a double cask. Pritchard's did a double-barreled bourbon. He did it so well that Woodford Reserve released a double oaked bourbon as a direct response to it. They say it's not, but his was out first. Theirs came out later. They said, oh, what makes our special is we use two new oak barrels. Okay, we got it, guys. Pritchard did that. Well, what he did here was he took someone else's bourbon, and he aged it, and he goes, you know, you can't tell Mr. Pritchard what to do, and it's what makes him awesome. He takes chocolate from the Olive St. Sinclair Chocolate Company, throws it in the barrel, shakes it around, and lets it sit. He's like, now I got a double chocolate bourbon. What's up? And it's awesome. Nose it, you'll notice a little bit of chocolate on the nose. But if you let this whiskey sit for another 3 or 4 minutes and you nose it again, you might get hints of mint. That's what happens to this bourbon as it sits in the glass. It'll start with a little chocolate finish to it, especially if you drink it out of a wine glass. And then you let it sit and you come back to it 25 minutes later and you get touches of mint to it. And it's really beautiful. And what the chocolate does to the bourbon, he's not using like super sweet chocolate. So it's not like he's sweetening the bourbon. He's just adding a texture to it. It adds a creaminess to the palate. It adds texture to the whiskey, kind of thickens it up a little bit and gives it a bit of a longer finish. And that's all he's doing there. And it makes for a beautiful bourbon. Again, it's just another alternative. Now, the next one, and again, nose them and taste them as you feel, but the next one is the Homestead Bourbon. And the Homestead Bourbon and the Colorado Gold Bourbon, you know, if you had some of the chocolate bourbon, rinse out your mouth a little bit with some water, and then nose these two again. And these two are really cool because it shows you the different type of mash bills that can go into bourbon. So the Homestead Bourbon is a rye bourbon. So it's corn, rye, and barley. The Colorado Gold is what we call the wheated bourbon. So it's corn, wheat, and barley. Now, the difference between the two is rye, you might get a little bit of that dill. You might get more of a rose note, and it's going to have more of a sharper edge. Now, that's for two reasons. One, it's at 113 proof, so it's at a barrel proof. But two is that it's got that rye in it. Whereas the Colorado Gold, you'll nose it, you notice it's got more of a molasses quality to it, like molasses sugar. It's sweeter, maybe a little bit of barnyard notes. That comes from the wheat. It's just a different style of bourbon. Both of them are very well made, but they're made in different ways. And this is where bourbon can really shine. You guys know, you guys have all heard of Pappy Van Winkle, right? The hen's teeth of bourbon. Bottles are going for so much money now, it's ridiculous. That was all wheated bourbon. Well, it used to be wheated bourbon from the Stitzelweller Distillery. The Stitzelweller Distillery closed down in 1991, and it was producing wheated bourbon that was originally going into the Pappy bottles that made it so legendary because it was a strikingly different type of bourbon than the majority of the bourbon which was on the market, which was a rye bourbon. So if you notice the Colorado Gold again, you'll notice it's sweeter. Like if you've ever had Pappy, you'll notice that this is sweeter like the Pappy is. Again, the Homestead's going to have more of a floral note like Four Roses might. Now, Homestead is contract whiskey pure. There is no Homestead Distillery. It's just a brand, and that's all it is. But it is a brand, again, that has said, you know what, we're going to be clean about it. We're going to acknowledge that we're a brand. We're from LDI. There's a lot of LDI bourbons out there. If we go to the shelf later, I'll point out 15 of them for you. But the difference is that all of these bourbons are going to put their own twist on it. So like Homestead said, we're only going to release at 113 proof. We're going to put barrels together that show really well together. We're going to get that nice floral note to the bourbon. It's going to have a nice long finish to it. They went with a more modern packaging. They're actually kicking themselves right now. These bottles are neat because this is straight bourbon whiskey that's in the bottle, but they didn't want to clutter up the label, so they left the word straight bourbon off of it. And they come to find out that the bourbon drinkers are actually pretty educated, and they know that straight bourbon means that the bourbon's older than if it just says bourbon. So everyone's like, your bourbon's not straight bourbon. They're like, no, but it really is. And it is. And so now they got to get their labels changed. So in January, these bottles are going to look, they're going to be different. They're actually going to say straight bourbon on them. That's a hindsight 2020 right there. These guys, trial by fire, I suppose. But it's 113 proof. It's a high rye content bourbon from the LDI distillery out of Indiana. And Some other whiskeys that come from Indiana is like your Redemption, and your Redemption, your Greenbrier, a bunch of different Bullet Rye from Indiana, Bullet Bourbons from Kentucky, Lawrenceburg. So enjoy it for what it is. And then the Colorado Gold, this is from Cedar Ridge, Colorado. And this is important, guys. Tune back into me for a second here. Colorado Gold, when it was released, if you guys want to know how influential California is to this whiskey movement that we're having, when Colorado Gold wanted to come to California, they sent me samples, and they said, we want you to sell our bourbon. And I said, cool, I really like your bourbon, but I won't sell, I'm not going to sell it because it's at 80 proof. You know, I had some barrel samples. I was like, your bourbon's beautiful at 90 and above. Let's bottle it at 90 proof. And then people in California will take much more of a shine to it. And he's like, but we bottle at 80 proof. And I said, yeah, I got that. Let's bottle at 90 proof for California, and it'll be a lot cooler. And the guys from Colorado Gold were like, all right, we can do that. We're fair guys. Like, we'll listen. So they bottled at 90 proof. So we're the only state in the nation that gets this bourbon at 90 proof. Everybody else gets it at 80. Yeah, because of me. So I'm fighting the good fight. But it really does show at 80 proof. If you add a little bit, like, I know that we're not pouring massive pours, and that's because we're worried about your sanity. But if you add a little bit of water to it, you'll notice that the barnyard notes will come out. You'll get the wheat notes more, and that's what it was showing at 80 proof. And I want you to be able to have that option, but I think that if you can get bourbon at a higher proof, then it allows you to become the blender. It allows you to add the amount of water that you want to it. Yes. So the question is, how do you make it the higher proof? Well, when you pull bourbon out of a barrel, it typically is at a higher proof. It goes in the barrel at 125, and sometimes it goes up from there. So what you'll do is you'll just add a distilled water to it to bring it down to the proof you want to bottle it at, so that you just add less water. So basically, you know, bottled water is cheap. You know, I'm more than happy to water down bourbon and sell you more bottled water, but it kind of messes with the flavor, and you know that, like, everything that I sell is considered to be a premium product. So, in order to maintain that integrity, in order to maintain my street cred, I need to make sure that the whiskeys match all the smack I'm talking, I suppose. So the Colorado Gold should match that smack. Like, it should be. This is barrel number 12C. The bottle we're having is bottle 21. And again, you'll just see it's at 90 proof. I've had a couple of 110 expressions done and whatnot, but those are hen's teeth as well because they came in and disappeared in about a day. But this is 90 proof, and this is the way I like to have this bourbon. Now, let's talk about number three real quick, which was the triple smoke. So that was 2 and 4, Homestead and Colorado Gold on the outskirts. You guys are nosing these, you're sipping as you want. But number three, the triple smoke, this is an American single malt whiskey. Again, from the Corsair Distillery out of Bowling Green, it's 100% malted barley, and then it's aged in 5 and 15-gallon casks. I think now it's aged in 15-gallon casks exclusively. And it's peated three ways. It's smoked three ways. They take the barley and they smoke it. They smoke it with peat from Scotland, cherry wood from the United States, and beech wood from Germany. You guys have all had smoky Scotch whiskeys before, right? Are you familiar with what peat is? Yes. All right. For those of you who are not, this is Pete. Say hi, Pete. Pete is just decayed vegetable matter that's been dug up and let to dry. I'll pass this around. Please nose it. You'll notice it doesn't have an odor to it. It's clean and everything. Don't light it, because if you light it, I'm going to get searched at every airport I go through for the rest of my life. So please just send it back clean. You guys know what burning things smell like. It's okay. Just don't light this, please, because it doesn't smell until you've lit it, and then once you've lit it, it smells horrible. And I promise you, I'm just going to go, my life through security is not going to be fun. My mouth has already got me in trouble a few times, but here you go. So the Corsair Triple Smoke Whiskey, you know, this was given Artisan Whiskey of the Year in the Whiskey Advocate magazine. It's a publication of Wine Spectator. So the Wine Spectator sister magazine for whiskey said that this whiskey, what's in your number three slot, the number seven whiskey, the Corsair Triple Smoke, was the best whiskey made by an artisanal distillery this year. And it's just because it's pushing the envelope. You'll get the sweetness. You know what? I'm going to have some of this with you guys as well. Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? You notice you get a little bit of a chocolate note on the finish. That'll come from the malted barley. Those are the whiskeys. Do you guys have questions about whiskey? Lawrenceburg Distillers, Indiana. It's, well, they do Greenbrier. They do, all right, so probably the most famous one you'll know is they make rye as well. And they do a Redemption Rye, and then they do Bullet Rye. So you're familiar with Bullet Bourbon? All right, Bullet, there's no Bullet Distillery. So Bullet's it's contract whiskey. It's good whiskey. It's contract whiskey. But the bourbon comes from Kentucky. The rye comes from Indiana. It comes from LDI. LDI is this massive distillery that's putting out all types of whiskey. They're putting out some really, really good whiskey. The small batch quality of it, like most small batch bourbons, all right, let's just cut through the smoke and mirrors. There is no law. If I own McDonald's big brand bourbon, and I own McDonald's big brand bourbon distillery, there's no law that says I can't go buy bourbon from Kentucky Fried Chicken, put it in my bottle, and call it McDonald's big brand bourbon. There's no law against that. So there's a lot of smoke and mirrors involved with bourbon, and they're very secretive about it. And I don't know, man. I've been trying for years, and they've given me the Heisman Trophy stiff arm the whole time. Like, the way you just got to read, you do some internet searches. You read. You talk to Marty. Marty actually knows. Like, he's one of my mentors in whiskey. He knows a lot. Talk to your friends. Just kind of see what goes on. You can go to straightbourbon.com. Those guys are old and crunchy, but they know a lot. But you just. I only lurk there because they can get kind of nasty sometimes with some of the comments they have. There's that. Chuck Cowdery has a great blog. He'll give you a lot of information. But the resources are finite, and it's always changing. It's evolving. Now, that having been said, as far as small batch bourbons and everything go, I don't want to pick on the big guys without giving them a lot of credit as well. I think that bourbon, and I've had bourbons dating back to the 1800s, and I think that bourbon is as strong now as it has ever been. I think that they're making bourbon as well now as they ever have. The technology is there. The coopers are good. They're getting good wood barrels, and they're being even more mindful of the blendings that they're putting together of different casks. Whereas in the 1970s, if they were ready to bottle a bourbon, they would just grab a bunch of casks and put it together and send it out, and that was that. Now, some regular branded bourbons showed really well back then because you had your great cask going in with your absolute bad casks. But now they're being more mindful of that. So they'll taste through and they're like, you know what, this batch of casks are great. These batch of casks are okay. These batch of casks are not very good at all. So what are they going to do? They're going to take the good casks, and that's going to be their small batch, their limited release, their premium product. The okay casks and some of the good casks are going to be their flagship. The casks that aren't very good, well, that's where you get your Ralph's bourbon from. You know, or your just regular, you know, a bourbon that went into a large chain of stores at 40%, like where someone's just looking for the quick high. They're just looking for the drunk. They're not looking to sit down and taste the bourbon. So I like picking on the big guys because I'm not one of them, so I can. But they are very mindful about what they're bottling. They are very intelligent, and they make some very, very good whiskey. So as far as developing the relationship with the distillery or developing the relationship with the brand, you've got to trust the guy who's putting the barrels together or picking the barrels for the brand. They're going to have a good palate. If you like what they're doing, then the relationship's still there, even if they're not pulling the trigger on the still. Does that make sense? Same thing with the independent bottlers of Scotch whiskey. I sell a bunch of those. They don't distill any of their own stuff. It's all whiskey from different distilleries, but they cherry-pick the good barrels. And your smaller companies will do the same. The big guys are making great bourbon. You had a question. Oh, all right. So the question was, does single malt have more than one grain? Scotch whiskey can have more than one grain. Single malt's only three ingredients, malted barley, yeast, and water. But Scotch whiskey is a combination of single malt whiskey and some continuously distilled spirit. And that can be oats, rye, wheat, unmalted barley, malted barley, whatever grain they can get in bulk at the time so that they can produce the whiskey that they need. And that's for blended whiskey, which is, you know, well over 90% of the industry is blended whiskey. So that's really where there's good whiskey coming out of there too. Any other questions about whiskey? You guys are all warmed up. Yes. What is pure malt? All right, so let's talk about that for a second. We're at an American whiskey tasting. We've talked about bourbon. We've talked about rye. Let's talk about single malt for a second. That way you guys can go home happy. The single malt, or let's talk about the different types of single malt. So really think of Scotch whiskey as five categories. Single malt whiskey, malted barley, yeast, and water, minimum of 3 years, single distillery. All Scotch whiskey has to come from Scotland. All Scotch whiskey must be a minimum of 3 years in the oak barrels. But single malt whiskey, single distillery, malted barley, yeast, and water. Single grain whiskey, single distillery, mix of grains, can be made in a column still, but still minimum of 3 years. Pure malt whiskey, or they don't use that term anymore. It used to be called vatted malt. Then it was called pure malt. Now it's called blended malt. Right? I mean, is a rose not a rose, right? So, blended malt whiskey. Single malt whiskey from different distilleries mixed together. So still three ingredients, barley, yeast, and water, but just made at different facilities. Also, by the way, I forgot to mention this. Single malt whiskey has to be copper pot distilled. You can't make a single malt whiskey in a column still. That you would be making a grain whiskey. And then that was four. Is it four? One, two, three, four. Is that three? There's three, so I got to come up with a few more. Blended malt and then a blended Scotch whiskey, which is a combination of grain whiskey and single malt whiskey mixed together. So we did blended malt, single grain, Scotch whiskey, and there's one more. I guess you could do a blended grain whiskey. We have different single grain whiskeys mixed together to make a blended grain whiskey. Compass Box, that's right, they did it. So there's your five categories of single malt. Other questions about whiskey? What do you got? Oh, you know what we need to talk about? You guys, I know that you are all billionaires in here, and you're going to buy a bunch of these bottles later, and you're going to cellar them, because that way when your little punk-ass kid asks you about the Scotch whiskey movement, you have bottles cellared. You can actually... you can see how the distillery has transformed over the years. The because you can compare batch 10 to batch 2020 with the androids later on, right? So if you're going to store whiskey for a long period of time, there's a couple things to consider. One is whiskey is not like wine. You don't want to store it on its side where it's connected with the cork. Whiskey's corrosive enough to eat through the cork. What you want to do is you want to store it in a room a lot like this. This is very nice temperature. Consistent temperature. You know, you don't want it to be exposed to a lot of light and then dark and light and dark. You don't want it in direct sunlight, but you keep it standing up in like a cool, dark place, and you just let it sit there. And that's it. You don't want to let it get dry. You don't want to put it underneath an air conditioning vent. Don't think that, you know, if you got a closet and you run a duck to the closet and you're like, I'm going to keep this room cool. Bad idea. We've lost good whiskey that way. Geniuses, me and my friends, we've lost some whiskey that way. Because as the vent blew air onto the whiskey, it changed something about it, and the whiskey started leaking out, and we lost a fair amount of 1954 Linkwood that way, and it hurt. But so don't put it under a vent. You don't want it to be exposed to wind. You don't want changes in temperature. You don't want light, dark. What you can do to kind of help go against like leakage and whatnot is you can buy parafilm off of Amazon. It's maybe $27 for a 250-foot roll by 2 inches. And you can wrap the top of your bottles that way. And that'll help seal it. And that's a great way to do it. But then and then you just want to kind of keep an eye on it. Like, whiskey will oxidize. So if you see that you're losing whiskey, you got two options. Sell the bottle or drink it. Don't sit there and try to, you know, don't golem it. Don't be like, oh, my precious. And then your whiskey it goes out to the angels. You don't want to do that. Like, just go ahead and crack it open or move it along. So what? Just a compromise in the seal will cause it to do that. If you have a very old bottle of whiskey, when you go to open it, expect the cork to break. It happens. So make sure you have a wine key with you to dig the cork out. You know, a little bit of fiber never hurt anybody in their diet, right? Whiskey will oxidize. So if you have an open bottle of whiskey, you know, you've got, like, you can gas them. You can use an inert gas to gas your whiskey. But if you have, like, this much left in a bottle of a very, very special whiskey and you're trying to hold on to it for as long as you can, you know, you need a special occasion to drink it. Well, for me, getting home in L.A. traffic is a pretty good occasion, especially if none of my friends are coming over so I can have all of it. That's a good occasion. So go ahead and kill the bottle. There's always going to be more whiskey. Yes. Sucking the air out? Well, I mean, really, like, trying to create a vacuum and then putting a cork in it, it's going to repressurize, so air is just going to go. I don't know. I don't know if I believe in that. Like, that's okay for wine, because, like, wine, you've got to move through it within a few days anyways, but with whiskey, you're talking about months and years, so I would buy some gas, some argon gas, and gas it that way. Or smaller bottle. That's right. You can get smaller bottles and move them over in the smaller bottle, so you reduce the amount of air that's in it that way. A lot of the whiskey guys do that. But again, if you notice that your whiskey is starting to oxidize a little bit, and mind you, it's not like you're going to open a bottle of bourbon tonight and you're going to have the bourbon next week and you're like, oh, my bourbon went bad. It doesn't work that way. I'm talking, I've got bottles that have been open for 5 years that are fine. I've got bottles that have been open for 1 year and they've oxidized. So each whiskey is going to be different. But if you notice that it's starting to go flat, transfer it into a smaller bottle. If you notice that if you're like, oh, no, it's too late, my whiskeys have all gone flat. When you have a glass, if you add a couple drops of water, it'll brighten it back up. It's never going to get it back to where it was before, but it should shock it a little bit. A fun experiment is to take a bottle, and especially with bourbon, because bourbon decants sometimes really well. Bourbon will decant like a really fine wine, and some of the harsh vegetal edges of bourbon will blow off, and you'll get to that nice sweet, the nice sweet characteristics of bourbon. Buy a bottle, get a pint of some cheap liquor, and feed it to your friend, and then clean out the bottle really well, and then buy a 750 of bourbon and put half of it in the pint and fill it up as high as you can and seal it, and the other half leave it open for about 15 minutes and then close it and just set it away and don't think about it for a week. At the end of the week, open it again, like shake it around, open it again, and let it sit open for another 15 minutes and close it, and do that for a few weeks, and after about 2 months, have them both side by side, and you'll see exactly what, like, straight from the bottle versus having it decanted for a little bit, how much it'll change. There was a bourbon, the Jefferson's Presidential 18. It was Stitzelweller bourbon as well, and a lot of guys slagged it off. But that's because they would open it and try it and say, oh, that's, But if you let that bourbon sit for about 6 months, it turned beautiful. I thought it turned beautiful, at least. So that's about collecting whiskey. Any other questions? Well, guys, I would like to thank you all for coming out tonight. And Marty will be in the other room, and I want to thank Wade for having me at the Sundowner Tavern.
Hi, I'm Curtis Taylor, and I co-host a radio show called Happy Hour, and I wanted to tell you about a great designated driver service called We're Driving. As you might have imagined, I really enjoy having a good time. But before I do, I always make sure I have a designated driver, and that's why I use We're Driving after every show. We're Driving is so easy to use. You go out, you have fun, and We're Driving gets you and your car home safe and sound. It really is that easy. This is how it works. We're Driving sends out a pair of drivers to meet you at your car when you're ready to go home. One of those drivers then drives you and your car home. Visit weredriving.com, that's weredriving.com, or call 805-421-9706 for rates and to schedule your pickup time. And do me a favor, when you make your reservation, tell them you heard about We're Driving on Happy Hour. Oh, and don't forget to tip your drivers. Cheers!
And now, back to the show.
We're going to get you mic'd up again, even though you've been talking for...
So one of the things I wrote down, small bottle transfer, and I think maybe you covered it there, but you're just talking, buy your expensive bottle, buy four or five, whatever, I mean, just little ones, and then just transfer it over. You don't have to worry about the oxidation as you're pouring it into the bottle at all.
Yeah, that's right. You can buy some cheaper 375 pints, or you can just go to a specialty bottle supply online and get them that way. But if you do, it's just a good way of keeping the amount of air that can be in the bottle to a minimum.
Right.
So, yeah, and what's nice to do is if you have the discipline to do it right when you open the bottle of bourbon or the bottle of whiskey, you can see how the whiskey will decant. It's really neat because no one ever really acknowledged it, and we're still kind of coming to age as far as our knowledge of whiskey goes, but yeah. It does change.
Discipline is the key word, definitely.
Yeah, I have no discipline.
Yeah. It all sounds good in theory.
Yeah. Chris, thanks so much. That was awesome. That was a fantastic talk and everything else. And we'll let you go so that you can go hobnob and rub elbows with everyone, because they all want your attention too. So thanks so much for all of your show.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Nice meeting you, Chris. Spilling some whiskey. All right, now that I've almost spilled two flights of whiskey.
So Curtis is doing a little manipulation on the board, getting us all back in the recap.
I think we're okay.
All right, there we go.
That's the beauty of having the springy headphones, right?
Right, I know. And those are really nice headphones, but the cord is so short you can't get more than a foot and a half away from it.
Meant for small ears.
I was thinking that they fit my ears pretty good, and I'm no Dumbo or anything, but I mean, evidently Jason's got
big lobes.
He's got a set of lobes on him. So the whiskey was delicious. The one thing that I noticed, and I don't know what your feelings are about peat and smoke, Jason, but I have such a low tolerance for it that I was, as we were walking in and I saw that it was a triple smoked, that I was scared of it. I was afeared, believe me.
I'm a fan.
I enjoyed it, but I was definitely afraid as well, mainly because whiskeys are not typically my drink. I'm a gin guy. I'm a beer guy. I'm wine. Whiskeys are not typically up my alley. I actually really like the smoke, but what I'm finding is that a lot of the times when I went through the four that were in the paddle, the nose to me is more appealing than the palate. My palate's not refined enough to pull out a lot of nuances with whiskeys, but I can really get it in the nose.
Well, I think that's where you end up going with a drop of water in it. And
really open up the bouquet.
The bouquet, but then also just take that edge off of it too, an ice cube or something, because it's amazing how that changes the alcohol.
I thought what was really exciting too, your little experiment in finding Joby with the smoke, then the chocolate. So kind of going back.
Yeah, I accidentally did that. I went back to the chocolate, and it completely, I mean, it was like, whoa, what happened to this thing? And it makes sense. I got a mouthful of smoke.
Well, I did get just a little bit of chocolate out of the smoke. That was, and then all of a sudden I get hit with the Band-Aid, you know, and I can't do the phenolics or I'm trying to remember what chemical that is, but I can't do it.
Yeah, as far as smoke ones go, this is actually fairly mild.
I thought so too. I mean, this one, it was
on the scale of,
for being a triple smoke, it was pretty mild.
And I thought that was cool because what was nice was it's triple smoke, but not necessarily here's a ton of smoke, here's three different smoke characteristics, which is really cool. So I believe it was smoked malt, peated malt, smoked.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely all the smoked grains. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what the third one was.
So it was, well, there was beechwood, there was cherrywood,
and then it was the peat. And the peated malt. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're getting it from the oak, and you're getting it from the peated malt, where sometimes in the big scotch ones, it's all coming from the peat.
Right, yeah.
And that's where you get that Band-Aid.
Right, yeah. And I was actually enjoying it as much as I could up until I got hit in the face with the Band-Aid. And then it was like, oh, yeah, no, now I've got to kind of cut it. The one that I was the most surprised by, though, was this the golden.
I love the golden. I'm glad you went that way, because, you know, we opened with the quinoa and we missed the first pairing because we were really focusing on the education of it. And we jumped in with the second pairing, but we were able to get a little taste of the quinoa.
Mm-hmm.
That was unique to me, but the golden stood out. I think the aroma was fresh. There's almost a little bit of fruit and that nice sweetness that Chris was talking about. But on the palate, I got some of the. This is one of the few whiskeys out of the flight that I really felt I had a complexity in flavor, for me personally, just because my palate again is so underaged.
I think it's the most delicate out of the four. Also, it just has that, and maybe that's why we're getting all those flavors.
Well,
it's definitely light in color too. I know that people can't see it, but it's golden. Tawny. Yeah, it's golden.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we were talking about earlier, somebody was mentioning was like it was a peach whiskey or something, or. In the beginning, Chris had said something, you know, here's whiskeys with these mangoes and these flavors. I thought, I've never had anything like this. This is as close as, I mean, the nose is very tropical fruit, and the sweetness is a very fruity sweetness, too.
Yeah. We should mention the chocolate one just, and I know he talked about it, just for the sheer fact that they've thrown chocolate in the barrel. It's a really cool concept. It's on the nose for sure.
Yeah, definitely on the nose. I wasn't sure which direction he was going when he was talking about that mouthfeel and the softness until I took a nice taste.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, that actually makes sense now. You know, it created a little bit of a velvetiness.
It is a velvetiness,
and then
yes.
I felt like there was a little bit of sourness too, though. When you get in the really high, if you're talking about just chocolate by itself, removing the whiskey component, high percentage chocolates, you know, 70%, not so much, but 80, 85, 90, 95, and I've actually even had a 99% dark chocolate.
Wow.
You start getting a little bit of a sour note, almost like a sour cream or a cream cheese essence, where you're that little bit of sour punch in the back. I got a little bit of that out of this whiskey, more on the finish. When I swallowed it, took a nice breath of air over the top, I felt like there was a little bit of twinge of sourness.
And the Lawrenceburg, we were talking about cask strength right before the break, mm-hmm. and or during the break, and then here is a barrel strength, 113, I think, minimum.
Yeah, 113.
That was the number six one.
That was, yeah, the Lawrenceburg Distillery. Correct. With the LDI, as he called it. Yeah. It's a giant distillery. And very cool. We talk about it in beer all the time. This is a contract bourbon. Mm-hmm. So you don't actually have to own your own distillery or anything like that.
You know, I don't think people should devalue that. And no. Chris reinforced that point numerous times. But in the food industry as well, if you can come up with a great product and you go through your initial samples and kind of your trial runs, and you say, this is the product I want to make, but there's no way I can do the scale. I can't do the volume. You find a great manufacturer. You find what's called a co-packer. And you say, this is my recipe. These are my requirements, and these are my parameters. You have to work within that.
Yeah.
It's still your product. People would say, oh, a big distiller, you're passing the buck. And not really. You say, you have to follow this criteria.
Right.
To make,
and you're
going to
taste it. It's not like you're not going to taste it
exactly.
Before you send it out. So that's the one I want to put some water in, and Chris mentioned that too. You want a couple of drops of water just to open it up.
I'm not sure if the whiskey's kicking or not, but did you see Curtis's little kung fu move?
Well, because it reminded me of Ninja Brewing.
Yeah, yeah.
And yes. How these...
What, which the, is the new term, that's
the,
right.
Yeah, the distillery.
I don't think you can ninja distill, though.
Probably not.
I don't think you can get in there at night, distill, and then just like leave your stuff there for 10 years.
Maybe it's Gorilla Distillery.
take a while.
And then come back to it.
Maybe that's the kung fu.
Yeah, kung fu distillery.
Where it takes 10 years to learn how to do it, maybe.
You know, so I guess we had three bourbons on our flight, at least three bourbons, and then they sort of single malt-esque,
right. Correct.
Triple smoked. So that was definitely a lot of fun and very informative.
I think that before we get out of here, the one we need to talk to Wade and Chris about trying is the one that's not technically.
Oh, yes.
That it's a spirit.
Right. Yes,
because
yes.
I think that's going to give a really interesting comparison to what we just went mm-hmm. through.
So that was a from water, sugar, yeast, and rye, right?
Right, after everything, after it starts fermenting,
then throw
the rye in to pull out the rye characters. Yeah. All right,
so
well, everyone
is along the same lines as doing a dry hop on a beer then? Like, after the fact, you're throwing something in? Just
yeah, you're getting flavor, but not, or you're getting aroma. I'm not sure with whiskey, what are you getting? You're probably getting...
You're getting some of the flavor out of that. It's pulling some of the flavor, definitely.
Yeah. Especially if you're throwing it in when you're boiling, or after you boil.
Well, I think it got really quiet in here.
People, I think everybody's buying whiskey outside.
Yeah, they took off. So we better calling it quits here and pick our stuff up and get out of the way so that we don't get swept up or locked in this little cubicle.
Yeah, well, they could close the garage door on us.
Close the garage door.
This is the most tiny little room ever.
Well, this has been a fun show, and it picked up certainly as we worked through technical difficulties and getting into our first whiskey.
But we noticed as the second flight came out, people's heads were up, they were looking at Chris, and they started asking questions. So the first four whiskeys really laid the groundwork for social.
The social lubricant.
Yeah. I have to say, this was an engaged crowd for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Compared to some tastings I've been to, they were on it.
They all wanted to learn what he had to say. Anyway, all right.
Great. So I definitely don't think this is the last time we'll see Chris. I think we're going to see him again.
Yeah, definitely. And just to get him on the show to talk about stuff, whether we're sitting at the studio or
fantastic
at another
idea.
Flight. Yeah. All right. All right. Well, this has been a great show. And, if you've liked this show, you can certainly find more at HopIt's Ed and / Pints and Pairings on iTunes at Pints and Pairings. What am I doing? Happy Hour.
Wrong show, my
Wrong
friend.
Wrong show. This
He's
is
looking at Jason.
Happy Hour and iTunes at Happy Hour. Also.
And why not check out Pints and Pairings while you're on?
Okay, there you go.
I think eventually it's going to turn into Happy Pairings or Pints
Happy
Hour.
Happy Pints and Pairings.
Pints Hour. There you go. I like that. And
once again, our special
Facebook guest,
Jason.
Thanks, guys.
Jason,
for
no, and
Ted
thank
along.
You. Thank, no, no, no.
Thank you for running the.
For doing. For being our techie guy.
Sound engineer.
I appreciate that.
All right. All we'll right. see you guys soon.
Catch you later.
Happy hour with Toby and Curtis. And I keep bumping that thing.
Later.
My paddle.
Hey, thanks for listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. If you like this podcast, make sure you like us on iTunes. You can also find us on Facebook under Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. Give us a like and share it with all your friends. We'd appreciate it. Cheers!